Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Recently, I came across a study that was done by the Association for Pet Obesity Prevention. And the study indicated that more than 44% of the dogs and 57% of the cats are overweight or obese. And between 2007 and 2008, the number of overweight dogs increased 1%, and the number of overweight cats increased 4%. The article then went on with the usual comments about how the public needs to be educated and how 1 pound of extra weight in a cat can be comparable to 50 pounds of extra weight in a person. And you know the shtick as well as I do. Unless you've been living on a different planet or in a coma for the past 50 years, you know that in order to lose weight, you need to take in fewer calories than you expend in exercise. So, eat less, exercise more. Idiot simple, right? No, it isn't idiot simple. And it's not idiot simple because for our dogs and our cats, overweight is a prime example of a human-animal bond problem. Logic says there's no reason for any pet to be overweight because the humans are totally in charge of how much food the animal gets. So even if the animal doesn't get a lot of exercise, it's a simple matter just to cut back on the amount of food, right? But it's not a simple matter. And it's not a simple matter because how much we feed our pets is an emotional issue, just as how much we feed ourselves is an emotional issue. And what is the source of that emotion? I've thought about this a lot. I certainly know from my own experience, coming from immigrants, my grandparents came over in the late 1800s, escaping poor conditions in Europe. They got over here, and next thing you know, they're in the midst of the Great Depression. My parents were born into the Great Depression, and then World War II with all of its shortages. So there was a lot of time in there when there wasn't enough to eat. At the same time, traditionally, going all the way back to medieval times and probably before then, the idea of being fat was a sign of higher status. So we humans carried that kind of baggage around. But years ago, I read about some experiments done by James Olds on the addictive and non-addictive pleasure centers of the brain. And what he discovered was that when he stimulated the addictive center of a rat's brain, the rat would continue to press a lever to get a food pellet. When there was no longer any food forthcoming, the rat would continue to press the lever trying to get the food. The rat had become addicted to getting food, and even when the food wasn't coming, the rat was going to continue trying until he was too exhausted to do any more. On the other hand, when Old stimulated the non-addictive pleasure center, the rat would continue to press the lever as long as there was food, but when there was no longer food, the rat would try a few more times, but then quit and go do something else. Lewis Thomas, physician, scientist, great researcher, great writer, referred to the non-addictive center of the brain as the center that communicates, I'm happy to be alive. And I shortened that to the simple joy of being. So where the addictive center of the brain answers the question, I am happy because I got a treat, because I got a promotion, because I got a new car, because something out there made me happy. The non-addictive center of the brain communicates, I'm happy I'm happy just to be me. Another study of interest to me was a very large study that was done of obesity in kids. And the results of this were sufficiently significant that several years ago, the American Academy of Pediatricians strongly recommended that parents do not use food as a reward in children. And the reason for this is because this teaches children to associate food with something other than nourishment. So food becomes love, food becomes success, food becomes something from out there that makes them feel happy and good inside. And you may have noticed, if you have young children, or if you're a grandparent, or maybe even if you're just observant, little kids are now given stickers or colorful pencils or something else, but they're no longer given food. Unfortunately, the veterinary profession has yet to get the message. There are still many veterinary practices out there that use food as a reward. And there's certainly no shortage of training programs that establish the same connection. Food isn't just nourishment. Food is love. Food is success. Food is reward from out there. It doesn't come from within. No, no, no. Somebody out there is going to make you feel happy, make you feel successful, make you feel smart. And so is it any wonder that when an animal lacks the experience to develop this inner sense and the confidence that comes with it, to say that I am happy just to be me, that they go scrounging for food, that they beg, that they get in the garbage, that they countersurf? I don't think so. I don't think so. But the question is, since it is solely within our province to control this, why do we do it?
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.